I do want to talk a bit about refugees tonight, but I want to talk about refugees in the larger framework of what has happened to the values in this country, a theme which I think every other speaker has touched on. I choose refugees for obvious reasons, but let's not be complacent just because the scope of the refugee problem is diminishing. The reality is that you can assess any government by the way it treats its most disadvantaged, its weakest, its most vulnerable, and the way we have treated refugees in the last few years means that we have got a very long way to go and no weak group can feel safe. The government, of course, has got away with this at least in part because of their dishonesty about the matter. The government's rhetoric is that illegals, queue jumpers, people who would throw their children overboard, come here, they take places that should be taken by other people, they're mostly taking a lend of us, they're people who should be sent back. And of course, if we don't take stern measures, we'll be swamped. Now, every element of the government rhetoric is false. First of all, they are not illegal. They are not illegal in any meaningful sense. It is not an offence to come to Australia without papers. It's not an offence to come here without an invitation and ask for asylum. It is a right given to every human being under Article 14 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which Australia actively promoted in 1948. Are we being swamped? In the last two decades, the average number of people coming here by boat, informally, seeking asylum, averaged 1,000 people a year. Every year, the number of authorised arrivals in the country, people coming for holidays or business or whatever, is 4.7 million. We have got the most watertight borders in the world, apart from Antarctica. 4.7 million authorised arrivals, 1,000 average unauthorised arrivals, the biggest number in any 12-month period in the last two decades of unauthorised arrivals was 4,100. And we think we're going to be swamped. It's insane. History and geography both demonstrate we're not going to be swamped, which means that what we have been doing to asylum seekers with such enthusiasm in the last few years is so much pointless cruelty. What do we do with them? Well, of course, we lock them up. The Migration Act says that a person who arrives here without papers must be detained and must be kept in detention until they either get a visa or they're removed from the country. The face of detention is difficult to summarise. I wonder how many people here have had the opportunity of being in any of the detention centres. Some, of course, have. There's a group here who know what detention's like. But the real face of detention at the moment, I think, is Baxter. Baxter was heralded by Philip Ruddock in the middle of 2002 as the family-friendly detention centre. Forgive the contradiction in terms. In fact, very interesting. You know, I mean, what they get away with in what they say publicly is just breathtaking. He called it the family-friendly detention centre. That is supposed to make you feel more comfortable about locking up women and children as well as men. I was at a public meeting in the Barossa Valley in about, I think, April of 2002, and one of the other people on the platform with me was an Assistant Secretary of the Department of Immigration, a very tough, powerful woman, and very smart. And I'd heard a few things about Baxter, and I'd seen a ground plan of Baxter, and the Baxter, which is a gigantic facility in the South Australian desert, is surrounded by what the ground plan calls a courtesy fence. It's not clear who's being offered the courtesy, but I took it on myself to ask this woman publicly, why is it that an electric fence is described as a courtesy fence? And she corrected me immediately and publicly. She said, it's not an electric fence. I thought I'd been misinformed. No, she said, it's not an electric fence. It's an energised fence. A 9,000-volt energised courtesy fence surrounds the family-friendly detention centre at Baxter. And if you go to Baxter, travel to Adelaide, drive 4 or 5 hours northwest from Adelaide, get to Port Augusta, and another 10 or 15 k's out of there, and you get to Baxter. And if you stand at the gates at Baxter and face east, you're looking at a Fred Williams landscape, the original traditional Australian outback that we all carry in memory or imagination. And if you turn and face west, as far as you can see from left to right, a 20-foot high, glittering, silvery wire fence, 20-foot high. This is the energised courtesy fence. And by the way, it's energised on the outside, so that if the protesters come, they're the ones who get the electric shock first. There's 20 metres of no man land, just red dirt, and then another perimeter fence inside that, 20-foot high, topped with razor wire. And there's simply a cage, a chute, that joins the outside perimeter fence from the inner fence. And inside the inner fence is a series of compounds made out of corrugated iron, but you notice that they don't have any windows in them, because the people who are held in the compounds are not allowed to see the Australian desert that surrounds them, and more importantly, Australians who are concerned about what's going on can't see the people that we're locking up. It takes quite a lot of rigmarole to get into Baxter to visit people, and the shock comes in waves that increase at each step. First of all, it takes you about an hour to be processed as you give 100 points of identification and identify the person you wanted to see and all this and that. And then you go across to the outer fence and the electronic gate opens and you step into the chute, this sort of long cage, and the gate closes behind you. And you can be there for up to 20 minutes until another electric gate opens at the other end. And then you go through airport-style security, and then eventually you'll be taken, escorted across to the visitor's centre. And there you get the shock. There you get the shock, because here we have innocent human beings who've been detained for months or years, and in one case, of one man in Baxter, he's been detained for 5 years and 10 months, during which time, by the way, he has run up a bill for his own detention of approximately $580,000. We make them liable for the cost of their own detention. Now, you get in there and you see them, and these are wonderful people. They're mostly from Iran, some from Afghanistan, some from Iraq. And there's a very strange sensation, because although they offer hospitality, a glass of water or even a cup of tea if they've got it, and they talk to you and they ask you if you can help with their case and so on, but there's something missing. There's something missing. Now, I wonder how many people, probably the elders in this group, can remember the famous photograph of the opening of the trial of the major war criminals at Nuremberg in 1945. Very famous photograph with Hermann Göring at the front and Rudolf Hess next to him and all of the others, two rows of them flanked by white-helmeted UN guards. And Rebecca West, the journalist, author, went across to Nuremberg and sat in for the first few weeks of the trial. And she wanted to capture the atmosphere of it all. And she did a thumbnail sketch in words of each of the defendants as they sat through the first couple of days. And they're devastating little word portraits of these people. But the one of Hess is what came to mind the first time I visited Baxter. She said he looked as though his mind had no surface, as if it had been blasted away, except for the depths where nightmares dwell. And that is what you see when you meet the people in Baxter. There is an absence behind their eyes that make you realise that in all but their organic survival, we have destroyed them. And it's a terrible thing to do, because they've done nothing but come and ask for our help. And 90% of the people who've come to Australia in the last 10 years asking for help have turned out to be genuine refugees. And yet we've locked them up and effectively destroyed them.